My thought is that the beginning of philosophy and perhaps the beginning of religion too is the problem of suffering. What are the responses to suffering? Well, compassion is, I think, the most authentic response to suffering. So after suffering, compassion, which is a kind of openness to the other person. And then building on that would be generosity, right? Which is a more active giving to the other person, and forgiveness is a kind of generosity.
Richard White is a professor of philosophy at Creighton University and the author of several books, including, recently, a book about spirituality and philosophy titled Spiritual Philosophers, From Schopenhauer to Irigaray. He recently published an article titled Teaching Spirituality, A Personal View. I have my own experience teaching a course, like in spirituality, and Richard and I sit down today to discuss our experiences, what spirituality means as an academic subject in philosophy and literature, and why teaching about spirituality is so challenging and rewarding. I'm Matthew Wickman, founding director of the BYU Humanities Center. Richard White, it is a real privilege to talk to you today on the podcast. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here.
So the podcast title, Faith and Imagination, I often ask guests whether and how faith informs their life and work. And in this case here, it's an open question for you. Does faith inform your life and work? If it does, how so?
Well, I don't have a traditional religious faith, but I was brought up in the Church of England, and I was a chorister, and so I was singing in church all the time. And then the other part of this, though, is that on one side of my family, it seems like there are so many missionaries and vicars and even hellfire preachers. And I always thought that somehow I missed that. It missed me, you know? But now I'm beginning to think that my preoccupation with spirituality may actually be a manifestation of this same impulse, because it's what I love to do. I love to, like you, I love to teach this class on spirituality, and I feel like I'm reaching a lot of students with the class and that it's making a difference in their lives.
And I can't wait to talk to you about that class. You know, it's an essay that you published, actually, titled Teaching Spirituality, A Personal View, that introduced me to your work. And now I see you've written books that I must read. So I'm going to be reading your books, Richard, here in the very short, very near-term future. Now, you teach, this is interesting here. So you are from England, you're English, but you've taught at Creighton University there as a philosopher for a long time. Now, Creighton is quite a ways from England. So what got you from England to Creighton, where you currently teach?
I decided that I needed to study more in the field of continental philosophy. So I came to the United States to go to graduate school. And when I came over, it's like the one school where that was a big specialty was the State University of New York at Stony Brook. So I studied there and eventually I got my PhD there. And then I applied for jobs, and you know how it is. Basically, you go where they send you. And so, you know, the people at Creighton seemed to like me and I liked them. And so that's how I finished up at Creighton University.
Okay, very good. Now, Creighton is a religious university, right? It's such the Jesuit tradition, is that correct?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah, Jesuit Catholic.
All right. Now, how many, is the student body there largely religious, or is the student body and the faculty, are they kind of mixed? You know, some religious, some not?
I would say mixed, although a lot of students have had Catholic education throughout their lives. So coming to Creighton is almost, you know, inevitable for them. But at the same time, we now have a lot of foreign students studying at Creighton because we have professional schools. And, you know, there's a medical school, a law school, a pharmacy school. And so I think part of the attraction is that they're given a preferred, you know, entrance to those schools. So it means that some of our students are, you know, Buddhist, Hindu, and some, you know, of the more typical students, I think, are at the point where they're struggling with their faith, and they're not sure what they believe at this point. I mean, they've taken so many science classes and so on that for the first time, they're thinking in a very active way about their faith.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very common for people in that stage of life, right, to encounter new paradigms, to sort of think independently in really new and dynamic ways. You know, I asked about the religious identity or affiliation of Creighton's students and faculty because I'm wondering whether you saw that course you proposed a few years ago, which you titled Ultimate Questions, Spirituality, as an anomaly at Creighton. Do other courses like this exist around the university, whether in your department or other departments, or is this really kind of a novel idea of yours?
Well, you know, periodically they change the curriculum, right? The core curriculum. And so it was decided that as a kind of capstone course, we would have Ultimate Questions. And it's taught by people in the theology department, as well as people in the philosophy department. So you know, each section will have a different focus. And so, you know, if you want a class in Ultimate Questions, Christian Spirituality, you know, that would be available. That's not my area of specialization by any means, but I was, you know, becoming very interested in the field of spirituality or the philosophy of spirituality. And so it just made sense to me to build a course around those ideas and the texts that I love to teach. And that's how it came to be.
Okay. How did that idea first occur to you? Because I teach my own class at here at BYU on spirituality by way of literature, more than philosophy, that we do read some philosophical things. But I could tell you how it came to me. I'm curious how teaching a course like this, though, arrived to your mind. Was it the kind of thing you'd been considering for a long time, been interested in for a long time, or was it the kind of thing that really kind of like an apple fell in your head one day and you thought, oh, I've got an idea?
Yeah. I think more so the latter, that for me, teaching and research have always gone together, that I learn a lot from teaching my students and it kind of fuels my own research into these things. So what I found was I was really becoming very interested in a lot of different philosophers, for the most part contemporary. And I was kind of perplexed because I didn't know what they all had in common. You know, so I was reading Schopenhauer, Nietzsche, Derrida, people like that. And then I realized that what interested me most about each of these thinkers was the spiritual dimension of their work. So, for example, Schopenhauer focuses a lot of attention on the idea of compassion, and he believes that ethics should be based on compassion more than principles. Nietzsche writes a lot about generosity as an important theme and gift giving. Derrida has just brilliant essays on forgiveness and also the whole idea of mourning. And Lucirigare on the nature of love. These are all spiritual themes. And so, you know, it suddenly came to me that this is what I am most concerned with. And I thought, at the same time, I would like to build a class on spirituality. And it just so happened, conveniently, that, you know, it was announced that we would need to fill so many sections of Ultimate Questions. And so I started teaching Ultimate Questions spirituality.
It's an inspired idea. I really love how you explain kind of the genesis of this idea, your interest in what linked these, in some ways, quite different philosophers. It's a great idea, Richard.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and it works. There is a continuity, I think, in the course.
Yeah, it sounds like that to me. I'll tell you how I came to my class teaching.
Please.
I'm currently the director of a research center, the Humanities Center here at BYU, and I don't teach a whole bunch in this class. And my department came to me several years ago and said, would you teach a course in about a year, a senior seminar literature course, you know, kind of a capstone class in the major on any subject you like? And I said, oh, yeah, I'll do that. I taught it before many times. I was finishing a book on one subject, literature and mathematics. And I thought, yeah, I can teach that. And I thought, I've taught that before several times. I thought, I don't want to do that again. And I thought, I've got another project I'm working on, like literature, high philosophy and lowbrow detective fiction. I thought, I'll do that. I'll teach that class. And I thought, you know, I've taught that before, both here and in Scotland, and I love it, but I want to do something else. And I thought, well, I'll teach something that's kind of like trending and present in the humanities, or something that's kind of new or trendy or hip. But I began thinking about those things and thought, that's just a depressing thought. I don't want to just do that. And suddenly I was just at a loss for what to teach. And I thought, well, let me just stop this train of thought. And I asked myself a totally different question. I asked myself, you know, what matters to me? What do I think is really important? Forget disciplines for a second. What do I think is important in life? Could I teach to that thing? And I thought, well, what matters to me? And I thought, well, you know, what matters to me is spirituality, spiritual experience. And I thought, well, what in the heck would a class like that even look like? You know, so I began giving it some thought. I drafted a few thoughts, sent them past people in my department who I trusted, who I thought would tell me no. And they said, great idea, go with it. And I thought, go with what? You know, but anyway, I had a year to pull it together and I began teaching it. It's now my favorite class to teach. I love it.
Yeah. And I think the students are probably responding to your enthusiasm, but also these are the questions that they are asking themselves, I think, for the most part. And they're generally not covered in a more traditional academic course.
That's,
you know,
right.
In philosophy especially, you know, philosophy is more an intellectual discipline. It's about having good arguments. And I think spirituality has to include that. You can't just believe whatever you want to believe, for example. But there's also, you know, the emotional and the intuitive aspect of things that needs to be considered.
That's right. Absolutely. Now, you wrote something in your article I found compelling to think about. You were talking about your own experience as a philosophy student, and you wrote that when you were a student, I'm quoting you here, philosophy seemed to address the really big questions we encounter in our lives. What is a good life? Does God exist? And does existence have any meaning? And these are, you point out, ancient questions. And at one point, this is quoting you again, philosophy was a kind of spiritual medicine, and its goal was to teach us how to live and how to face all the vicissitudes of life, including suffering and death. You spoke a minute ago about finding kind of a spiritual through line between different philosophers. Would you still say that philosophy is a spiritual discipline? Do these kinds of questions still animate philosophy, or has the discipline changed?
Well, I think, like many other academic disciplines, philosophy has become more technical and remote from, you know, even intelligent people who have not studied philosophy. And I think that's a real shame. And so I think what I'm trying to do then, perhaps, is to return to the fundamental of philosophy, that originally it was spiritual wisdom. I think. That's the core of philosophy. And the first philosophers, people like Pythagoras, for example, the Stoics, the Epicureans, for them, philosophy is how to live your life. And so not so much the intellectual questions, which are interesting, but I don't think they're fundamental in the same way. And I would say that the other spiritual traditions, like the Taoist tradition or the Indian philosophical tradition, they have remained focused on this idea of spiritual wisdom. And in the West, for the most part, we've kind of gone away from that, I think. But reading through later philosophers, the experience that I described earlier, it seems to me, at least in continental philosophy, there is a strong spiritual current there. So maybe we are seeing a return to the spiritual dimension of philosophy.
That's interesting. You know who I love reading on this subject? You've read many times, Pierre Hadot, who writes about philosophy as a way of life, you know, and I think he's really good on how philosophy in the West was once, you know, this not just a set of thoughts or ideas you think, but really a way of living and conducting your life. You know, in your course on spirituality, you discuss in your article kind of the meaning of spirituality, and you point that the range of definitions of spirituality is quite broad, and you've taken a broad approach in the course that you teach. You explore a range of spiritual meanings and traditions, you know, in your course. I'm curious why you decided to take that breadth approach as opposed to taking a narrower approach based on, say, the religious tradition of Creighton, that coming out of the kind of the Catholic Jesuit tradition, for example.
Well, my sense is that each different tradition will focus on some aspects, and the corollary of that is that other aspects are somewhat neglected. So, for example, one of the first things that we discuss in the spirituality class would be compassion. And compassion is the supreme virtue in the Buddhist tradition. And so there's a lot of discussion about compassion, not just in the ancient writers, but also in the Dalai Lama's work, which is much more contemporary. And so when we discuss compassion, I think it's appropriate to go to the Buddhist view because that theme has been most discussed there. Then we move on to something like generosity and forgiveness as spiritual themes. And one thing I think is the case is that forgiveness is really central to Christianity. And so, we will talk about the story of the prodigal son as an exemplar, a paradigm case of forgiveness, and think about forgiveness, somewhat from the Christian perspective. Just last night, I had another class, and we're talking about the spirituality of nature, the possibility of a spiritual relationship with the natural world. And there, I think, the Western tradition probably went wrong at some point, but we still have this oppositional relationship with nature. It's man literally versus the world. And in Taoism, you have the goal of a harmonious attunement to the Tao and of the natural world. And so now we're discussing Taoist ideas in relation to nature. For me, that seems the way to go rather than, telling people, these are the basics of the Jesuit tradition. I mean,
sure.
So it seems more open-ended in that respect.
Yeah.
And also just the books that I teach in the class, for the most part, these are books that people will probably think about their whole life, right? Like the Tao Te Ching, like the Death of Ivan Illich. I mean, these are really classic works, and so I like to think I'm providing an opportunity for students to read these really classic, important works from a variety of different traditions.
Yeah, it sounds great. It sounds like a class that I would very happily take, actually. You know, at BYU, where I teach, there is a very strong religious presence on the campus. There's a coherent religious tradition, you know, here, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I find that students here often have really rich spiritual lives of their own, and they've got rich spiritual experience that I can draw from myself in the class. So what I tend to do, my approach has been start with where they are with what we know collectively, and then begin to broaden it out and deepen it. Let's read some scholarly stuff on spirituality they've not read. We might read stuff in the future by you, for example, to provide a broader vocabulary for the experiences that they recognize or identify with. Bring in literary texts that put these things in new ways to broaden the basis of the familiarity they have with these principles, and then to defamiliarize and to kind of really present different spins on what is otherwise familiar. I find doing that there's a strong core of commonality that we start with, but then it goes into new territory that hopefully achieves some of the same ends as what you're doing. I will say the first time I taught the class, there was a student in my class who was taking at the same time a class on Eastern spirituality. And she'd come to class on occasion talking about their meditation exercises. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm not doing that yet. That wouldn't be a bad idea.
Well, it's nice when students can make connections between all the different classes that they're taking.
Yeah, I thought so too. Now, in your essay, you quote somebody, a book, a very good book called Beliefs Without Borders. This is a 2014 book by, and I hope I pronounced the name correctly, Linda Mercadante. I'm going to read a little paragraph of your essay where you talk about her work. I'm going to ask you a question or two about that here. You write, in Beliefs Without Borders, Linda Mercadante claims that spirituality and religion can be analyzed in terms of four basic components. The first involves belief in some kind of larger reality, some transcendent or sacred force, something greater than the individual. The second involves the desire to connect with this greater reality. The third involves the promotion of different practices as an aid to this connection. And the fourth involves the expectation of particular behaviors that foster or demonstrate the desired connection. Okay, so those four things, and in sum, you have belief in a larger reality first, second, the connection to that reality, third, different practices as an aid to connection, and fourth, the behaviors that come out of that connection. I'm curious, do you focus on all four of those things in the course that you teach? If not, is there one of the four to which you devote more attention in your course? And if so, why that one?
Well, generally we begin the class by discussing different definitions of spirituality. This is something that people recognize, but at the same time is hard to articulate. And I think for a lot of people, it seems almost unreal. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what spirituality is. So from all the reading that I have done, this is one way of thinking about spirituality that makes sense to me, because it doesn't disqualify other definitions of spirituality necessarily. And so I suppose I do focus on the first one, that spirituality involves a sense of a higher or a greater reality and our connection to that. So that's not to specify the nature of that reality, but maybe I could give examples of that. For instance, Martin Luther King, who devoted his life to social justice, he recognized that at any point he probably, could have been assassinated. I mean, he was fully aware of the risks he was taking, but he decided that he had to continue because justice is a higher reality that we have to defer to, right? That it's more important than our own individual existence. And so it seemed to me that was a really good account of spirituality. Some people find spiritual fulfillment through the natural world, for example. So there, to recognize that you belong to a greater reality that is nature. I mean, people have lost that, I think. But go to a mountain or a beautiful river, it can allow you to recover yourself, because we are a natural being. So that was the main one. But then it seems to me that we do have ways of connecting with these higher realities. And for example, the spiritual virtues, things like compassion, generosity, and forgiveness. I don't think they're necessarily ethical virtues. I mean, they can be, but not exclusively. I don't think you have to forgive everything that's done to you. You may decide that you can't, but if you're able to forgive, that could be a spiritual accomplishment, right? And so that would be a sign that someone wants to go beyond their own self, that they're able to do that, maybe for the sake of another person, because to forgive them would allow them to get on with their life.
Yeah, excellent. I'll add to that. I mean, one more spiritual virtue, wisdom, to know how and when to forgive, for example.
Yeah.
Right. This course, as you describe it, Richard, it sounds like a really beautiful course. Do students, when they come into the class, do they already come there because they have this sense of connection to something greater? Or do you find that when you start talking about these things, you have to do persuading is the wrong word, or convincing, but the students need to be opened to what that sense of connection even is? Do they come to you preformed, or do they have to sort of really be educated in the existence of these things you're talking about?
I think that there is a sense of recognition. Oh yeah, these are important things. And maybe they have not thought about them. I don't know how it is at Brigham Young, but at Creighton, a lot of students come there with a very definite idea of what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. You know, that they have fixed ideas, they're kind of on the professional track. And so this class, it kind of jolts them, and it gets to them to thinking about things that they recognize as being important. But it's like, who has the time? We have to take so many science classes and qualify. I always thought that you go to a university to find yourself, right? Apparently, that's no longer the case.
Yeah, less and less the case. This is one reason why there's a crisis across universities, not just in the humanities. But what you're describing, though, is the best about education, I think. The opportunity, it's really such a privilege to be able to go somewhere for a number of years and really to think and discover new things, discover new horizons, to find yourself, to learn about others and the world history as well as in the present. And a course like what you're teaching, I think, is so integral to that kind of experience. I think what you're describing is great. Now, you've published a couple of books on philosophy and spirituality. One is titled The Spiritual Guide, subtitled Four Steps on the Path of Enlightenment. Then the more recent one is Spiritual Philosophers from Schopenhauer to Rigorai. Let me take up the title of the first of those two books, right? About the path of enlightenment. You mentioned in your article that both Eastern and Western spiritual traditions understand spirituality as a journey, as this path of enlightenment. Do you try to create a sense of that path or journey for your students? If so, how can you do that in the course of a single semester?
Well, if you can build maybe from one module to the next. So my thought is that the beginning of philosophy and perhaps the beginning of religion too is the problem of suffering. That for as long as we're just enjoying our lives, we have no reason to stand back and ask questions. And so it's like when we suffer, it's like we're pinned down to ourselves. We are forced to think about why this is happening. This is why I begin the course with the book of Job. You know, why me? What did I do to deserve this? And then, well, why do bad things happen to good people? And I would argue that a lot of philosophy, like the Stoics and the Epicureans, you know, for them, the goal is to come to terms with suffering. But also, you know, Buddhism and Christianity, too, they focus on suffering and whether suffering can become meaningful. So what are the responses to suffering? Well, compassion is, I think, the most authentic response to suffering. So after suffering, compassion, which is a kind of openness to the other person. And then building on that would be generosity, right? Which is a more active giving to the other person. And forgiveness is a kind of generosity that, as we've mentioned, you don't have to give. But if you choose to, what a gift that is. And so that kind of development, I think it does matter the order in which you bring up these themes. I don't know that I've found the right order yet, but I think just the sense of a development from one week to the next, that's like a part of the spiritual journey.
Yeah, that's great. I like how you unfold that. One thing I do, I try to create part of the experience for students in terms of the assignments that I give. I know you give it a final paper asking them about their spiritual journey. I do that. I have them keep journals. They can choose a couple different kinds. It can be a journal of their reading of sacred texts or scripture, their journal of their experiences, like events that happened to them that seem have spiritual import, or make the journal that make them more mindful about the subtle spiritual impressions that they have. And these things, you know, they start becoming more aware of these things, and then they can chart their own progress over the course of several weeks. That also might be helpful.
I have my students write like response papers.
Yeah.
So whatever the reading is, because I have so many, I have 100 students this semester.
Wow.
Together. And so
that's a lot,
you know,
of enlightenment.
It's hard. It is hard to say, you know, all of you write a response or whatever. But I divide the class up into groups, maybe four different groups. So group A writes the response this week. And they have to talk about the reading. And I say, you know, it'd be really good. Not, I don't require this, but it'd be really good if you could somehow use the reading to, you know, think about something in your own life, you know, to integrate the reading. So it's more than just ideas, but it's something that you can incorporate as a part of who you are. So when we discussed forgiveness, for example, and talked about different kinds of forgiveness and so on, some of my students wrote about situations in their own life where they felt that they had to forgive someone, or they decided that they can't, they just can't forgive. And so, you know, that's important. I think it shows me that it's not just, you know, will it be on the test, but it's something that they're mulling over and using to make sense of their experience.
I'll bet you read some things that they write that really move or surprise you on occasion. I think those are great assignments. I'm interested in the tenor of discussion in the course. Do you find that a course with this theme, spirituality, elicits a different quality of discussion? Do you find that you engage the students differently in this course, or that they engage each other differently? Is there a felt response to it that's different from a class? You're just, say, teaching a class on Nietzsche and the will to power, for example.
Yeah, I think there is, because the personal dimension is a more essential aspect of this class. And so we're not just analyzing ideas as we might do more so in a philosophy class, but we're talking about our experiences as a way of clarifying ideas. So like recently, you know, we talked about, I don't know if this has happened to you, but when you're in the line to get coffee and you reach the top of the line and the worker says, well, someone's already paid for your order.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's called, that's paying it forward,
yep.
Basically.
Yep.
And that's happened to me, you know, and it's, wow, it's a good thing when that happens, but that makes you want to do that for someone else. Or if someone helped you when you were struggling, and you're more likely to help someone else. So it's not paying it back, but it's paying it forward. And we will discuss examples of this kind of thing in class, how generosity can have a ripple effect in people's lives. And the same with forgiveness, that if you're forgiven, you would be more likely to forgive someone else, and so on and so on.
That's nice. I've got a shout out here to my mother-in-law. She, when she crosses the Golden Gate Bridge, she lives in the Bay Area, she'll often pay for the car behind her. And that's nice. Not a cheap fare. And I keep waiting to ride with her in the car when she gets up the window and someone says, oh, someone's paid your fare. And she's still waiting on that one. But it's interesting. In the class I teach, I'll tell you what really changed the tenor of conversation the last time I taught it. We were early in the semester, I want to say the second day, and we were talking about a couple of core ideas about spirituality and a poem. And a student shared something personal and became a little emotional in sharing it. And it changed the mood in the room. And at that point forward, that was the most open group of students to each other ever taught in my life. It was really amazing to see kind of how far they could go, both intellectually and in connecting with each other and the material. It was really pretty wonderful. Mm-hmm. Has this course that you taught when you began teaching it a few years ago, has it had a carryover effect in other courses that you've taught? I mean, do you find yourself teaching differently generally as a function of this interest that you've developed in spirituality? Can you measure that in yourself?
To some extent, I think that's true. So, for example, I sometimes teach a class in world philosophy, which would be the different global philosophical traditions, Chinese philosophy, Indian philosophy, Native American, African, and so on. And I realized that what spoke to me most, and hence I think to my students, it is that core of spiritual wisdom. So we tend to do the classic texts, you know, that the Analects of Confucius, the Tao Te Ching, the Book of Chuangzi, rather than more contemporary stuff, because my sense was, well, you know, read the Bhagavad Gita first and then some more contemporary, you know, works in Indian philosophy. And I do the same thing in intro to philosophy. I think that the students are interested, especially if they don't plan to be philosophy majors, that they're interested in wisdom. And so we just had a great week discussing the nature of friendship. And the text is Aristotle's discussion of friendship in his Ethics. And students, I think they were so surprised that, you know, such a text was inspiring and provoked them into thinking about their own friendships and whether X was really a friend or not and so on. So it has. Now I recognize, you know, what kind of text to use and what kind of questions to ask in the classroom.
Nice. You know, you've done some really good work in this area, Richard. Your students clearly are the beneficiaries, but so are people like me by reading what you published on the subject. Do you see yourself staying on this path of working in philosophy and spirituality? If so, kind of what's next for you?
Well, I would like to continue. I don't know if you teach Rilke in your class, but I'm more and more interested in Rilke, who's a very spiritual poet, I think, and who thinks through questions of life and death and the meaning of life in his poetry. So I'm thinking about an essay on Rilke, and if I teach philosophy and literature, maybe I could use that as a text. Maybe a book on love is in the future. And then also what I'm actually working on at the moment and kind of finishing up is a book on God. And so this is, I don't know how to put this. It comes from my own confusion that I feel like I can neither believe nor disbelieve. And it's like, well, what's all that about, you know? And someone asked me, well, do you believe in God? And to me, that is a very perplexing question. I don't know what to do with that question because I don't really know what the God that is being referred to, and I don't know what it means to believe. You know, to believe, does that mean you just say yes on your check sheet, or does it mean that somehow you live your life in accordance? Is that true belief? You know, so these are, you know, weighty questions, and I thought maybe I could try to think things through.
Fascinating. Yeah, we're actually holding a symposium here next week at our Humanities Center on the subject of belief. Titled On Belief. We've got a number of speakers, and I imagine coming out of that with more questions than I currently have, because I'll have my mind open to new things.
Oh, sounds great.
I'm looking forward to it. I say our religious tradition here is one that values questions, so I love that you're asking these big questions, Richard, and answering them. It's enriched my own understanding of the subject. I'm so grateful for your excellent work and your time in talking with me today. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your podcast, and I've enjoyed our conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith and Imagination podcast. This podcast is sponsored by the BYU Humanities Center and the College of Humanities at Brigham Young University, and is produced and edited by Brooke Brown and Abby Thatcher. The music for this podcast is composed by Ethan Wickman and is performed by Nicholas Phillips on Albany Records. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on your podcast platform. And if you're interested in other episodes or would like to know more about the BYU Humanities Center, check out our website at humanitiescenter.byu.edu. Thanks again for listening.